Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Creams and serums are made of 70% water, 15% preservatives and emulsifiers, leaving only around 15% for the active ingredients that your skin needs. But luckily now, there's Fiber Skincare.
15 years ago, the scientists behind Fiber Skincare started working on nanofibers, which are 500 times smaller than human hair. You know, I saw that in... Three Body Problem. One year ago, they patented a way of wrapping the nanofiber around oil or liquid-based ingredients. This means they can deliver five times the active ingredients compared to creams or serums, as there is no need for water, preservatives, or emulsifiers.
The first formulation made with this technology is plant-based, anti-wrinkle. It's a set of patches that you use over a series of 7 days. You just put these on whenever you would apply your serums, and your skin is going to feel tighter in 10 seconds. And over the seven-day program, it has been clinically proven to reduce wrinkles by, get this, 19.4%, a very precise percentage. In fact, they have a tighter skin guarantee. If your skin isn't tighter in 7 days, they're going to give you your money back, no questions asked.
You get the tighter skin guarantee with this 7-day routine. Tighter skin or your money back. Get a 15% discount code by using the discount code GAME. That's Fiber Skincare.
It's the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses. This is the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses.
Hold on. I'm gonna fluff my hair. I forgot who I am for a second. I had a weak bitch moment, but I'm back.
Welcome to Game of Roses. This is Pace Case.
This is Bachelor Clues. And before we begin tonight's analysis of the big game, we have to let you know that we've reached a decision. After 2 hours of intense debate that required multiple bathroom breaks, multiple gettings of drinks, we have finally arrived at a decision.
I went to the bathroom and got a drink. Are you just making fun of me?
No. I'm saying it was an intense debate. There was a lot of thought given to this.
Oh, yeah. There were many portions to the debate.
As you know, we don't like spoilers. We like to analyze the game as it happens and be able to make predictions and all this kind of stuff. But there was some news that has come out, some speculative news, I should say. This is not confirmed by the show or anything, that has come out. And although it does not affect the outcome of this season, it has nothing to do with the play in this season, it is related to the next season of The Bachelorette.
Mm-hmm.
Because it has to do with a very key figure on that season.
Who that person who wears the crown is. And look, we looked at everything in making this decision. We looked at the fact that there's precedent. I told you halfway through Clayshia's season that they were going to switch The Bachelorette and have Tayshia come in. I made that decision. And this is similar. Hadn't been announced by the show, but felt like it was important to talk about.
And we feel like being able to talk about this thing will enhance our analysis of tonight's game, because it does make some things that happen in it far more interesting knowing this information. And once again, This has nothing to do with the outcome of this season. But we are going to say this now. We are going to use this information in our analysis.
We are going to talk about this information throughout the rest of this episode.
And throughout the rest of the season, and throughout the rest of the next season, because it is that big and that important. And I think it's going to become public knowledge. I think it's going to be verified by the show within days anyway. So I don't think it's like a huge spoiler, even in and of itself. Do you want to do the honors?
We have learned that the next Bachelorette, our technically 18th crown, 17th Bachelorette season, will be Katie Thurston.
Again, this is not confirmed, but it was reported by Reality Steve yesterday, and no one is really refuting it. There are a couple of things popping up. Katie had a Instagram story that said, "News to me," and Mari Pepin went in Reality Steve's tweets and said, "False," but I think these things are in reference to the information being revealed at the Women Tell All. I think the information is still accurate that Katie Thurston is the next Bachelorette. And if it is true, it means she will be the lowest place finisher of all time to be awarded the crown, having left this season in 11th place, which is fascinating, meaning that her second, third, and fourth audience games were so fucking strong, she could overcome one of the weakest first audience games that we have probably ever seen, I guess, from a crown. So that's interesting. There are many interesting things about it, but congratulations to Katie. She's obviously a fantastic player. And we are looking forward to watching that season, which is going to be coming up in like fucking 5 weeks or something. I mean, there's just no end to the churn of it now. But that's the spoiler.
The only crowns who have been even close have been Juan Pablo Galvez, was a contestant on the 9th season of The Bachelorette, was eliminated in week 6. And Hannah Brown, who was what, 6th place?
7th.
7th.
So that's where we're at. That's the baseline information we are going to be assuming is true as we continue forward. We thank you for indulging us. And again, we came to this decision after some debate, but we felt it was the right thing to do because, again, it doesn't ruin any of the gameplay that's going to happen for the rest of the season. We still don't know that shit. Like, I know that there are some spoilers about it out there. I am not aware of them.
Me either.
I remained in the dark on that.
And at this point, it's not a season spoiler either, as Katie went home tonight. So this was our thought process. Hope y'all are on board.
And now let's do it, Pace Case. We're going to give you what you came here for. And now, Pace Case and Bachelor Clues proudly present analysis of play in this week of our beloved game. This is Game of Roses.
Cold open. We start on what looks like camera security footage of Heather Merton coming up to Nemacolin in a white van talking to a security guard in a mask. It's like we're watching a play. She's maskless and she has a frantic energy about her, and she tells him, "I'm looking for Chris Harrison." This masked security guard gets on the phone and calls DLH. And this masked security guard was my
Jorge Moreno, bystander of the week.
Oh shit, right out the gate. Your bystander was in the fucking cold open.
Right off the bat. Well, oh my God. He recurred multiple times throughout this episode, and he participates in this back and forth play, this comedic play that they keep cutting to. And I thought he did a great job.
I didn't want to tell you this, but
what?
That security guard is actually Farmer Ty.
What?
No. Maybe. Somebody sent me your Jorge Moreno bystander of the week from last week, Farmer Ty, the guy who led them on the farm date.
You have info on Farmer Ty?
It was his LinkedIn page. It was like Nemacolin Recreations Director or something like that. He was definitely not a farmer. He was just some Nemacolin employee who'd worked there for 7 years.
Well, it was hard to tell. I'm pretty sure it wasn't Farmer Ty. I feel like this man really played a security guard role well and like truly is a security guard, but I've been fooled before. He calls up Dark Lord Harrison on the phone, and DLH says, Heather Martin? What the bleep is she doing here? I thought it was fuck. Clues thought it was hell.
I don't know which it is. I mean, it was bleeped. My mind just went to hell. What the hell is she doing here? But it might have been, what the fuck is she doing here? I don't know. But the final shot we see of this is shot from a high angle within the security guard booth. It is as though it's security camera footage, just like the footage of the car rolling up. None of this is real. This is all faked. All of it is acted. And the opening scene here is trying to make it seem like all of this is just Heather Martin's idea, that she's coming up here and we're just using security camera footage. We're not even shooting this. There's not even a camera crew out there. Not scripted or set up in any way. And yet the entire thing is completely scripted.
It's absurd.
It is directed like a fucking movie. The entire show is a lie. My rage is at 1,000,000%. And then the show starts. That's how they fucking got me going tonight.
But was your rage satiated by the next image, which was a deer silhouetted against the night sky?
It was
a possible creature.
It was a couple.
Two deer. Double satiation.
Yeah, I loved it. Then we ease into the show. Serena P gets a little colorful narrator role to get us up to speed about MJ and Jacinia's feud. KD calls MJ the last of the Mean Girl tribe, identifying this idea of tribalism that has overtaken the country of America. It exists as well in the game. The game is a reflection of America, a mirror held up to exactly what we are.
It is exactly what a portion of the country is. It's not super representative. For instance, no women above size 4.
No, I know. But I'm just saying this idea of like there are two tribes in The Bachelor. Mm-hmm. And she's saying MJ represents the last of the Mean Girl tribe. I feel like America is split into two tribes as well at this point.
Then we cut to the two-on-one date itself. Jacinia versus MJ.
They're arguing. Matt pulls up in his sports car. He walks through the halls and he enters the two-on-one room. He sits between them and tells them he's here to find a wife. And they have to get to the bottom of their tension. He bachelor preferences Jacinia. This is when he pulls a player of his own choosing to go have some one-on-one time. And what Jacinia does in this one-on-one moment is a fucking work of art. She tells him that Victoria and MJ were the instigators of the bullying. She says, MJ says she likes to lead by example, but she created the division. She started it. This is a brilliant preemptive strike here. MJ constantly is saying, I lead by example, I lead by example. Jacinia knows she's going to use that as a fucking offensive play, and she just cuts it off at the knees. This is a brilliant use of the advantage that you get if you go first in a situation like this. You can attack the other player's main offensive weapon and they are not there to defend it. I really love this play.
We've seen it before regarding tears, I remember. I can't remember who did it, but they were like, oh, that person's like just going to start crying and then it'll whatever. And then on cue, that person cried and it just undercut the tears completely.
To eliminate someone's use of tears, or in this case, to eliminate someone's use of essentially a catchphrase. She said, I lead by example so many times. It really is a kind of identifier of who she is as a character. And it was just beautiful. I really, really loved it.
And Jacinia goes hard at her. She pulls no punches. She says, MJ loves to preach about leading by example, but she's the one who started it. She says, everything she has done has come from a place of malice. That is a very 4TWR accusation. MJ seems to be flying off the handle, says she shouldn't have said my fucking name, breaks down in tears. I just can't stand her. And like, this is kind of cut together. I'm not sure exactly what is being said in the moment, but she says, I just can't stand her. She's such a little bitch. She's not going to get away with this. I can't fucking do this right now.
Yeah, only some of that is played on face.
Yeah.
Much of it is not. I had the same note that it was like, I don't know how much of this shit is real. I don't think she said all of this.
But Jacinia does a good move here, saying to Matt, I value everything you stand for. I'm standing by for you. I'm there 100%. I'm 4TRR. I'm your teammate. I'll back you up. Thought it was a great thing to end her portion on.
And then Matt James returns to take MJ to her one-on-one time, and MJ ITMs, hold on, let me fluff my hair. I forgot who I was for a second. I had a weak bitch moment, but I'm back. She claps her hands, and she's ready to fucking play. She's basically psyching herself up for the big moment. She knows this is the bottom of the ninth. Two outs, bases loaded, two strikes, and this is it. Here comes the last pitch. What are you going to fucking do with it? Because she knows that if she doesn't nail this, she's fucking going home. She is fully aware of that walking into this. Full gameplay on display here.
Grabbed my popcorn. She tells Matt, her heart is so big. I'm trying to show that to you every second. The fact that she said I'm creating a divide while I'm trying to bring everyone together. I'm emotionally and mentally exhausted. Matt's like, yeah, I had to do a double take. Doesn't seem like something you would do. MJ sort of tries to play a PTC here. She's like, someone can say one fucking thing. I've had to overcome so many fears this week, and now I have to overcome my biggest fear of losing you. Pulls out tears here. It's a respectable Hail Mary effort.
I was astounded when she pulled out the tears. I was like, all right, she's playing. She really is leaving it all on the field. She did as well as she could. Matt James has an uncanny ability. I will say this. He's not a good lead by any stretch of the imagination. He gives all of them the same excuse or tells them all the same reason that they're here. You're here because I want you to be here. Oh, thank you. but here, it actually kind of works in his favor because she's essentially saying, I'm not the instigator. I'm not the bad person. He's like, yeah, I know. I back you. Totally fine. He's never getting in anyone's face who's being accused of being a villain or a bully in any way. He's just like, yeah, you're cool to me. That's all I care about. But then later, we see what happens as MJ comes back and gets into a fight with Jessenia. They fight about which one of them is an, in quotes, weak bitch. And it seems like this line, to me, was fed to them by the producers because MJ's saying it in her ITMs. They're saying it out loud in this fight. I felt like both of these players were in ITMs right before this and that line was being fed to them. And the producer's like, yeah, you need to tell her that that's what she is. She thinks you're that. Bye, 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 bye. You know, I don't know why else would they both would have said it in this argument.
By the way, did you catch what Jessenia says here? She calls her Meredith. Meredith, you preach about weak bitch energy while weak bitches lie. I was like, oh, this is like some sort of attack using her real name.
It's like a mom attack when your mom, when you were a kid, would call you by your first and middle name. And then portion two begins with Matt James walking around his study by a crackling fire, rubbing his hands together. This is a beautiful ponder shot. James says they're both incredible and he likes them both, but he can't continue this journey with both of them there. He's conflicted, of course. You are Matt James. That's what the show's about.
He holds up the gesture for 50-50 like he's weighing both of them also here.
That's how I make my decisions always. I put up two hands like they're scales of justice.
Could be my wife. Could be my wife. Am I feeling weak bitch energy on either side?
But he returns to our two two-on-one combatants, and he gives little speeches to each. To MJ, he says, our connection is undeniable, and he felt that from the first conversation. He's enjoyed their moments together. To Jessenia, he says, I know you said you're going to be my rock, and I see you. I feel you. He ponders on the rose, and then MJ, I'm sorry, I cannot give you this rose. So despite her tears, despite her attempts here, she is eliminated. And Jessenia ITM some tears. It feels good to be validated. And then he walks MJ out.
MJ, you know, kind of an error at the end. She's still attacking Jessenia in her limo exit, saying that she sabotaged me. That sucks, but Jessenia is petty. And then the women walk to the cocktail party and they theorize, based on environmental clues, what has transpired on the two-on-one date. Game player Kit says, I thought we were going to walk in and find MJ or Jessenia. Game player Sarita P says, there's no rose. And it looks like there might have been one previously. Game player Rachel, I'm going to go ahead and assume he gave the rose out to one of them. Game player Chelsea, we saw an empty rose placard.
I loved this so much. It meant that the producers had to have left that little silver tray with the rose on that table on purpose so that all of them saw it when they came in. This is a very purposeful thing. So now they get this scene. The producers get to shoot this conversation of all of them speculating about, oh, shit, was there a rose on that? I don't know. Well, if there was, but had to have been. I guess he must have given it to somebody. Oh, Jesus, who got it?
And then they time holding Jessenia back to walk in the room.
They send her in, and you see a little sigh of relief fall over the crowd. It's kind of like your friend coming back after playing Russian roulette, because there is this idea about the two-on-one that it is terrible, that you never want to be on it. And I'm going to continue to say this till the day I die. The two-on-one is not actually the death sentence people think it is. I maintain it's actually a good thing, because it gives you a 50-50 shot of a fucking rose. There's no other date that gives you that.
We'll see how the stats play out, but I think it is a scarlet letter, a scarlet 2 on your chest when you get the 2-on-1 date, and you are never a viable candidate.
A viable candidate for what, though? No one's a viable candidate for the ring, except one person.
For ring or crown.
There have been rings that won it, and I don't know if there have been a crown ever that won it. The first 2-on-1 date ever, technically, the first Roser goes, was Travis Stork, and his ring winner won it. Trish wasn't a Roser goes.
Oh, first Roser goes. Okay. Right. Yeah. Okay. Season 8. Yeah, it happened. But modern era, professional era. Are there ring winners who have been on 2-on-1s?
No, but there's million IG club members. There's high sand placement.
Who's in the million IG club who was on a 2-on-1?
How dare you? Ashley Iaconetti?
Oh.
Thank you.
Okay, the singular one. No, I'm sure there's more and people are going to come at me, but it's unlikely. And I'm just saying statistically, you either go home that week or the next week. I think the stats are going to play out. We're still tabulating, but...
But I'm saying those stats don't necessarily matter in this case, because the attitude of what a 2-on-1 is affects those stats. A new attitude has to come into the game about getting the 2-on-1. You are now playing a different game.
It doesn't need to come into the game.
It does for players who want the fucking 2-on-1, Rose, and don't want to get kicked off like Jessenia got here.
If you get a 2-on-1, you have to have a positive attitude, but I'm saying you should avoid the 2-on-1. That's what we're arguing about.
And I'm saying, I think there is a way to play them that will guarantee you the rose almost every time and allow you to go further in the season.
Sure, there's a way to play them, but they are not a net good, is what I'm saying.
Only because that attitude exists. I think if it were changed, it could be a net good. You could want to get the 2-on-1 because now it's a head-to-head battle. You don't have to deal with a group dynamic. You don't have to deal with the... I have to have a PTC and a walls and a love level of a 1-on-1. This is something totally different. It's about who can discredit the other person better and first. And here Jessenia did it. And it was brilliant. She now gets to walk back into that room with a fucking rose in her hand while all those other players are like, shit, now we have to do a rose ceremony. She's safe. Her anxiety is over.
I think Jessenia played it pretty well as she could in the circumstance, but I don't see her being top 4. And we've talked about that being a huge difference. Whether you make top 4 or not.
I don't think she'll be top 4 either.
The woman asked Jessenia how it went. She says, well, MJ didn't really have an argument for herself, so she was walked out. Katie smiles. Serena C. sets up this line. Looking forward to seeing Matt's fine ass walk through the door. DLH walks in. A finer ass than she even could imagine.
And then Serena C goes, oh no. I love when they hate the Dark Lord. And of course the Dark Lord tells them, no cocktail party, we are going straight to Rose. And DLH slides this little line in here. I know it's disappointing, but I respect Matt James' decision. Fucking, are you kidding me? This is all the producer's decision to invoke more turtling.
I don't think Matt has made a single decision this entire season.
But this decision by the producers is meant to force more turtling, which is something they are doing on almost every date. Now they're doing it at fucking rose ceremony cocktail parties. The amount of manipulation they're doing this season is insane. It's every fucking interaction has something where they're like, okay, and none of you get to talk to him. Okay, moving on. Now there's five new players coming in. Okay, you're all going to hate each other. Now this is going to happen.
It's almost like, and Ryan cries immediately at this happening, because basically she knows she doesn't have a chance at this point because she hasn't gotten any time. And it's almost like, it reminds me of when I went to the Women Tell All and they kept like extra audience members in this warehouse. And it's like, especially I think because it's this COVID season and they are completely trapped, we're just seeing people basically waiting in the warehouse who don't get any time, and we're just seeing them suffering, and that's it.
It's also weird this COVID season. I think you're right about the trapped nature of it is more apparent than it usually is in other seasons. The illusion that the players or the lead have any control over the situation is completely removed in Nima Cullen and La Quinta, because they're all... anything they do, you're very aware of the fact that the producers had to set this up. They're like walking into rooms that have weird shit in them. And it's like, well, somebody set up that weird shit. But when you see in a normal season where they're just like out on a yacht swimming in the ocean, they appear to be free. They appear to be moving of their own volition.
They appear to be experiencing real life.
Yeah, this is much more like, oh, they're living in a weird, made up, like high school play. It's so strange.
Yeah, it makes it seem much more like a prison. And especially that scene that we saw, what was that, last week, where Kit and Victoria are walking in the pairs down the lawn. My friend went back to New Zealand, and you have to stay quarantined in this building for 2 weeks, and she recorded like this place outside you can go and you can like walk in this loop, and it just reminded me of that. You're entirely regimented and cloistered.
30 minutes in the yard. And then for some reason, Serena C. starts coming after Katie, accusing her of always being involved in the drama. And Katie's like, what are you fucking talking about? And I also agree, what the fuck is she talking about here? All I can think is the producers have cut her some kind of a decent sand placement to be a goon.
This is the only thing that makes sense to me. It definitely seems like it's coming out of nowhere, but...
Goon job, right?
What?
It's a goon job.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, look, if they want to set Katie up as the Bachelorette, why not give her one last victimization play where a player is attacking her seemingly out of nowhere and her 4TRR is questioned and she's able to combat it?
But baseless. I mean, we'll get to it later. The things that she's specifically saying make no fucking sense. And for those who don't know, a goon in hockey is a hockey player who's on the team that doesn't really play hockey, but when they get in fights or they want to take out a player on the other team, they will send the goon in to just beat the shit out of that player and get like penalized out of the game, but he will have caused an injury or something like that.
What, they don't even know how to play the sport?
They were like good hockey players in high school or college or something, but they're not like pro level, but they can just kick the shit out of people and take damage and stuff like that. So I feel like Serena C is essentially playing that here. The coach has put her in to go like take Katie out.
Another theory is that she realizes she's low on the totem pole and she's like, you know what? If I can manufacture a rivalry, I'll get a little screen time, maybe get some sand.
Whatever's going on here, it's highly orchestrated and baseless.
Ryan is crying, says, I don't know if I've ever been this scared or anxious in my entire life. And Michelle plays an STCO, a shoulder to cry on, and they issue a primal scream into the Nemecolon sky. STCO and Discream.
A rarity. Portion 3 begins with 7 roses laying on a pedestal, and Bree explains to us that Jacinia, Rachel, Abigail, and Kit have roses. That means 3 of us are going home. So we're about to cut down to 11 players is what we know. Piper ITMs tears. She hates caring this much and not knowing what he's going to do. This is a good 4TRR, 4th audience and 3rd audience game here. And then James emerges and apologizes for canceling the cocktail party, but he is confident. He's just following his heart, so don't be mad if he doesn't give you a rose, basically. He always issues these little things that are like, sorry, these are hard decisions, but I'm just following my heart. So
yeah, I know turtling is psychological torture, but here we are. I know you spent all week preparing your mini dates for me, but too bad.
Then we get this rose ceremony. Serena P., first flower, Michelle, Piper, Bree, Chelsea, KDITM. She feels weak a lot here, and she needs to know that everything she's going through is worth it. Katie gets a rose. DLH emerges. Ladies, Matt, this is the final rose tonight. He offers the dark touch to the lead, Matt James. This is a small pat in the center of the back that he gives to all leads upon final rose release. And then Serena C gets rose number 7. And that is it. DLH comes back to deliver the TAM SIG. Take a moment, say your goodbyes. Maggie, Brittany, and Ryan are consumed by the Dark Lord.
Brittany goes home. Does that mean no sand for Anna?
What they did to Brittany was terrible. They embroiled her in this entire rumor about being a sex worker.
Entertaining men for money.
Wasn't true, seemingly. Could have destroyed her life. They made that a whole plot, that this rumor might destroy her life. They cut mm-hmm. that into the show. They hit it again and again. They made it the whole plot of an episode. They don't even give her the fucking respect of an exit speech here. She literally walks out and that is it. We never hear from her again. That is the prize they give you for destroying your fucking life.
Well, I bet she'll get a WTA hot seat.
We'll see.
By the way, they did give an exit speech to Maggie, who said, "He has no idea the love I have, how much love I can give. My person is definitely out there, and I can't wait to meet him." This was such a great Bachelor in Paradise sand line. Perfect exit speech. The fourth audience starts picturing her soulmate for her, thinking of what members of Bachelor Nation they want to be on sand with Maggie.
Yeah, it was expertly done. And Ryan, on the other hand, was sobbing through her exit speech, saying she wished she could have changed things. She just felt like it was too late and it's not fair. That is correct, Ryan. It is too late and it is not fair. That is the basis of the game you're playing.
Yeah. It's interesting keeping this higher number of women longer so that they're turtling, don't get any time. They're alternates.
And then portion number 4 begins with an image of a creature. This creature is a big creature.
Uh-huh.
It's a bison, a.k.a. a buffalo. And uh-huh. he's licking his lips.
And the creature?
This creature, this buffalo, was my... creature of the week.
Unfortunately, this buffalo was also my... creature of the week.
Why is that unfortunate? You tricked me.
I was trying to do a little cliffhanger. Build that into it my worked. Story.
It literally worked on me. I was like, what other creature even was there?
Beautiful creature. I think that was in the zoo, probably. Their wild animal park. The women are in the Nemecommon room. They discuss how there are 11 girls. 5 have had one-on-one. 6 have not. Serena C says that one-on-one is everything. And Dark Lord Harrison comes in. He goes, "I know last night was a lot, you know, having to go straight to Rose. I know you hate that," but he felt comfortable going straight to Rose because he's confident his wife is in this room. "You guys are elite." And he says, "Jump forward just a couple weeks. We're talking hometowns. We're talking overnights." He is explaining to them once again where they are in the season.
He's amping up their competition. He's prodding them in that moment. He's being like, "We're almost to the fucking playoffs, guys, huh? Pump it up, and here's your date card." Boom. So now they're all as on edge as they possibly can be when this date card is going to be read. And it is a one-on-one. Tonight will be worth the wait. And this goes to Piper. Serena ITMs that Katie is calculated and annoying. Again, she's hitting this fucking like, this has to be a goon job.
She also does a sad, colorful narrator time cop thing here, saying, "Now I'm waiting again for that time." It's getting more serious and kind of scary.
And then Serena C. walks down the hallway and knocks on Katie's door saying, "We should talk." This is going to be the second audience attack Katie has had to deal with this season. The first one from Victoria Larson, who she took down, arguably. She at least weathered that storm, didn't relent, and Victoria was the one who went home before she did. So I would call it a win.
This room doesn't look as nice as Sarah Trott's isolation chamber. This room looks a lot shittier. But they sit on this couch. Serena C. says, "You didn't understand what I meant. I'm frustrated by time getting taken away by your antics. I don't think you're truly here for Matt. This is a very hardcore 4TWR attack Serena C. is playing here. Katie says, "You don't know what Matt and I talk about. You were being very insecure last night. I thought you were coming to apologize."
Oh, I love that. We've seen that a couple of times this season. Like, "You owe me an apology." "No, you owe me an apology." Love it. It's when that defense or offense is played about, "I'm owed an apology from you," there's no going back on it. You're now at a standstill. It's a stalemate. It's going to be a game of inches, little movements here and there to who can get the advantage on the other person.
Yeah, Serena C. says, "For what?" And Katie does another power move. "The fact that you're attacking me is pathetic. If you have a problem with last night, take it up with Matt." She's like, run it up the chain of command. Serena says, "These 10 girls, their biggest picture here is to be with Matt." This was such an interesting line to me. I'm like, the implication is that Katie has a different big picture. Also, all of them are Instagram influencers. They all have the same fucking picture.
That attack, the 4TWR attack, is becoming harder to use with each successive season.
Yes. It's impossible to do now.
We all know they're all there, 4TWR, at least in the first place. You know, you can convey 4TR or whatever, but
Serena C. has been playing the games for months. She recorded herself telling her parents she was going on the show. That is not gonna try my one chance at love thing. Katie says, "I am who I am. I have never been fake, and Matt likes me for everything I am. Don't speak on his behalf. You keep taking up so much of my energy. It's a waste." Serena says, "Your antics, you're inserting yourself in other people's business, lighting little fires everywhere. You are the freaking arsonist. Talking about bullying and toxicity doesn't help your relationship." Katie says, "I didn't drop any names." Serena says, "It doesn't matter." And she says, "I'm not going to sit here and let mean girls be mean girls. So yeah, I told them there was bullshit in this house. Not my story to tell. So if girls wanted to tell their story, they were going to tell their story. I didn't drop MJ's name or Anna. Let the girls speak for themselves." I feel like this, she's demonstrating the benefit of a general tattle here, that she didn't drop names. She let these people implode on their own games.
And perfectly done. I mean, she executed a flawless tattle, which is one of the hardest things to do in the entirety of the whole fucking game. But then this argument escalates to kind of a screaming match with Katie saying, "Let me talk." And the other women in the other room can hear them as this is starting to erupt. And
yeah, it's a peeping Tom. Peeping Tom, knock, knock.
As well as Katie is playing this, you can tell her emotions are getting into the game here. She's getting
for
heated.
Sure.
But still, even as emotional as she is, she's playing it well up to this point.
She does a little move here. Serena, by the way, can't stop looking at the camera. She's not doing great at that. She says, "You're focusing on things other than your relationship, and I'm not the only one who thinks that." And Katie does this little curtsy gesture and says, "Thank you for your feedback," which I thought was awesome. And I think she should bring that into her season as crown.
Yeah, she's very good. I agree with you. That little flourish at the end is just like a fuck you. And it was so well timed, so well placed. And then she just turns and walks the fuck out. We are done here. I will get the final performance. I will get the final moment. You can go fuck yourself. It's great.
It definitely had the gravitas of a, "And Jesus still loves me."
Yes, totally. And then Katie ITMs, "I cannot reason with crazy. I don't know why she's so hung up on me. She doesn't care about her opinion anymore." Serena C. comes back to the other players and tells them that Katie stormed off, and she talks about her antics, taking time from them to be with Matt, like her sex positivity performance. She brings that up, the dildo. I'm like, wait a minute, her antics? You mean her fucking overwhelmingly dominant strategy that made her the main character of night one?
The way she came in hella hot with her sex positivity, that was her shock and awe performance.
Yeah, and it's like, yeah, correct. And it worked.
They were all performances. Every limo exit is a performance.
It's like in baseball. If somebody hits a fucking grand slam and you're like, this guy just comes in here and hits fucking home runs all day. It's like, I don't get what he's doing.
Yeah, this idiot, she's gonna get the tag of the Bachelor premiere and she's gonna become the next Bachelorette.
And then Serena C lies to the fucking group and tells them that Katie says she wasn't here for Matt, which we have never seen in the show. I'm sure they would have put that in the show had it happened. And Katie starts getting flustered, and she still has the wherewithal, though, to say, if you have a problem with me and Matt's relationship, tell Matt. If this is real, your little act you're putting on, put your fucking money where your mouth is. Go tattle to him. High level strategy. She is furious, but she is still turning out great plays, because a regular player in this situation would just defend themselves. What I have with Matt is my business and fuck you and blah, 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 blah. But to have that extra step above, go talk to Matt then. See what that's about. That may stick in her head. Serena may just go implode on Matt after that suggestion. We don't see that happen, but it was like, I just love this little bit of play. She is proving really that she understands the game, even when she is emotionally, potentially overwhelmed by the circumstances of it. She's still able to do the good play.
She definitely comes across a lot better than Serena C here. Serena C starts to get super petty and says, your actions will speak louder. Katie says, I'm still here. And Serena C says, barely. Like, as if, like, they're all aware of this totem pole of the pecking order, and Katie is on the cusp of going home.
And then Heather Martin shows up with no mask. This is the cold open scene. She pulls up to the masked guard, and portion five begins with fucking Dark Lord Harrison marching down this long driveway in his best fall vest. And before we get to what happens between the Dark Lord and Heather Martin, please enjoy this word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by FanDuel. Football is back, and the best bet you can make is downloading the FanDuel Sportsbook app. It doesn't matter if you're new to gambling or an old pro, FanDuel has something for everyone. And as an official sports betting partner of the NFL, you know your bets are safe. There's also never been a better time to use FanDuel, because right now, you'll get up to $1,000 back if your first bet doesn't win. You can even turn a small wager into a big payday with a same-game parlay bet. Just sign up with the promo code Spotify to place your first bet risk-free on FanDuel Sportsbook. Download FanDuel today. 21 plus and present in Virginia. First online real money wager only. Refund issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
The guard said, you're not allowed in here. We're closed to the public right now. He's performing very well. This complete bullshit.
She's like, well, but isn't there some way I could come in? And of course there is, because the producers have had you sequestered in the same hotel as all the other players for the past 2 weeks. And they're going to bring you in specifically to interrupt this episode. So that's what they do. Chris Harrison squints his eyes in the bright glare of the Nemacolin Woods as Heather Martin steps out of the car and says, hi, Chris. And he says, Heather? She gets out of the car smiling, and she invokes the royal name of Hannah Brown, the biggest Instagram player in the history of our beloved game. And she says that Hannah told her Matt James would be perfect for her, and that means a lot coming from Hannah Brown. So she drove to Nemacolin. None of this is true. But we are made to watch it unfold. Her acting is bad and gets worse as the rest of this episode progresses. But they're selling this. They're forcing us to watch this.
Dark Lord Harrison says, we are halfway through. We got a quarantine. And Heather says, I don't think that's going to stop me. What?
I know.
Yes, it is, Heather.
It's like, well, wait, though. Can nothing stop you?
Oh, my God. And then he says, not much surprises me. I honestly didn't see this one coming. We'll take this one up the hill. It wouldn't be close to today. Also, go back to your motel and we'll be in touch. She hasn't mentioned a motel at this point. This conversation is so fucking crazy. It reminded me of like a Waiting for Godot type scene that they keep cutting back to. It's just so absurd.
when he says, I didn't see this coming, she says, yeah, I didn't either. I'm like, oh my God. She's basically admitting she thought she was going to be there from the beginning of the season.
Do you think Heather Martin is going to be the Ed Waisbrot of the season and she's never going to actually talk to Matt? It'll just be her and Dark Lord Harrison.
Drinking wine at 2 a.m. in his private suite. Please. I don't know what they're using her for. I feel so bad for what they've done to Heather Martin in this entire fucking thing.
She's getting a strong fool edit at this point.
One of the strongest full edits we've ever fucking seen. We'll get to some of our other scenes here coming up, but Jesus fucking Christ. So she turns around, goes back, and is going to wait for word from the Dark Lord and the producers on whether or not she can come on the New McCullough grounds.
He's got her running up the flagpole, up the hill. And we get the first portion of Piper's first one-on-one date with Matt. She gets in a car with him at night and she says, I used to really like surprises and then I came here to hell. She didn't say that part.
And he drives her to a remote location in the darkness of night. He gives her a flashlight and a kiss and he forces her out of the car into the shadows. She has no idea where they are or where he is taking her. They walk around and they come to a switch in the middle of the woods. And he demands that she throw it. And when she does, all the lights turn on in a private amusement park.
Yay.
We've seen this exact same date.
I mean, I'm like, maybe it's been long enough that most people haven't seen this, but I'm like, we have seen that little light switch thing that represents lighting up the carnival so many goddamn times at this point. I want to say the first was Ashley Hubert, but I'm not sure, on Brad Womack season. But I know we've seen it a bunch since.
Yeah. And as they start jogging towards this private amusement park, Matt James ITMs the importance of carnivals in his life. He said he looked forward to going to the fair 365 days a year. The lights and walking through the gates was just magical. What the fuck is he talking about?
This was maybe my favorite line of the episode. Matt James is, like, works for big fairs secretly. Like, it kind of reminded me of Brendan Marias last season being like, the carnival was the biggest part of the town I grew up in. I don't know. It's just like a very strange thing to say you think about 365 days a year.
It's definitely the same producers who did La Quinta and Nima Colin, and both, you're right, have these moments where a player or the lead is kind of forced to talk about the personal attachment they have to a carnival.
Yeah.
Which doesn't really exist. He said he fucking thought about going to the carnival 365 days a year. Is any human on planet Earth have that thought 365 days a year?
Because there are people who are really into Disneyland. And they are thinking about it all the time.
Yeah, fair enough.
But by the way, speaking of that Brendan Marias date, how much better is this date than that fucking La Quinta sweat shit show?
Oh my God. I mean, this actually has like rides and shit and real carnival games. The other one was just like a couple of fucking popsicle sticks glued together with toothpaste and they had to like pretend that they were fucking
in 110 degree heat. He also, by the way, he also calls it his enchanted carnival. But what was enchanted about it? How is it enchanted?
Only somebody who looks forward to fairs 365 days a year would be able to identify that. But they sit down, they play a game where they squirt water into these things and something's racing against each other. They make a joke about her beating him and her competitive side coming out. She gets a stuffed animal. He hits a sledgehammer bell thing. He gets a kiss from her. They ride a few rides. They kiss some more. They eat cotton candy.
Good chemistry game by Piper. And she praises the process here. She says, oh, it's showing me that falling in love is possible here. Oh, and she also tells him, group date after group date makes this that much more worth it. So she's praising the little time that she has had with him on group dates.
Speaking of group dates, back at the Nima Common Room, The players are all gathered and they know it's going to be a group date card that's coming through the door, and they know the name that is not on it will therefore have the next one-on-one. Rachel reads the group date card. This lane leads to love for Bree, Kit, Rachel, Michelle, Jacinia, Serena P, Abigail, Chelsea, and Serena C, which means Katie is going to be getting that last one-on-one date this week. Katie delivers an acceptance speech here. Can't wait to have it be all about him and her. And Serena C ITMs that she hopes James sends her home on their one-on-one.
Portion 6 starts, and it is a selfie video by Heather Martin in her quarantined motel room. She says, I was on Colton season, and I'm here to see if Matt could be my husband. I'm quarantining, hoping and pray I can get through this. Done one COVID test. Hopefully in a couple of days I can meet Matt. Ah!
This checking back in with Heather Martin at the different phases of her quarantine. It's just, I mean, all this other shit's taking place over the course of one day.
Yeah. Oh, the timeline is insane.
And she starts talking about how she's going crazy. I mean, we'll get to her next performance, but it's just like, how long have you been quarantining? All this other shit's happening in a day. In
also,
one day.
Why do we need all these check-ins with her?
This Heather Martin thing, I just don't... There's some times that happens in our beloved game where the producers throw something in that is just, it's too far. It's so manipulative. It's so distracting to the normal flow of the game that it jars you completely out of it. This is that for me. And I don't know if the normal viewing audience picks this up. I don't know how much of America is watching the show and just being like, oh my God, I can't believe Heather Martin chose to get in a car and drive to Nemacol and just to hopefully get on the show. How many people believe that's real?
What percentage of people watching this even know who she is?
I think a high amount. Season 23 wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, but she wasn't like one of the main players.
Kiss Virgin, though. I feel like Kiss Virgin stood out to me. That was an interesting kind of like, hadn't seen that.
No, I mean, obviously I know who she is.
Whatever the case about knowing who she is, how many people believe any of it's real? Someone does. Is that 10%? 20%?
All of the Hannah Brown stands, which is probably a big portion of the audience. And I feel like she's kind of trying to do a little bit of a Hannah Brown thing, like a goofy good girl. But we get to the night portion of Piper's one-on-one date. And Piper says, I'm really trying to be positive right now. I'm stressed out. Don't want to ruin a good thing. But I have to be able to open up and communicate my feelings, though it's very foreign to me. So she's loading these walls. And at dinner, she tells him, I'm not used to reflecting on feelings. I've seen talking about feelings as weakness due to my upbringing. She's playing these walls that she had loaded. And Matt says, how did your parents express emotions? And she said, well, we don't say love. It's all through actions, although I want that. It's not how we operate as a family. I wish it wasn't how I was brought up, but it made me tougher. And she cries here. And she says, I need words. And that's why it's so hard for me to let people in. This is a great PTC she's playing here, that her family never said that they loved her. And Matt says, we could work on that together. It's something I've struggled with. He has a parallel story saying that it's liberating to put who I am on the table, which I'm like, what has he put on the table? I feel like we don't know who he is at all.
Nothing. Like, nothing. Although,
the charcuterie boards.
I did read that he and Chelsea Vaughn, when she had her conversation about her hair, he added to it with his own experiences and the things he's gone through with his hair and different hairstyles and whatever, how it has affected him emotionally. And the show cut that out.
I hate
that.
We never
got to see
that
footage.
Why would they cut that? Because it...
You tell me.
It's like, oh, Matt James is black.
I have no idea. But that supposedly is the case. That's what I've read.
I feel like that's like erasure of his lived experience.
Yeah, of course.
It's terrible.
This is the show we watch. This is the game we
love.
That's
what I want to see that conversation.
As do I. I think as do most people.
Matt gives her a challenge. Says, I'm challenging you to be open with me. Tap into why you feel the way you feel so I can be there for you. And Piper says, I show love through actions, but I want to do more of saying. I know I'm not good at it. Be patient with me. But I don't want to be afraid of how I feel anymore. I wouldn't want to bring that into our relationship. Matt, I am falling in love with you, and that is the scariest thing in the world to say because I have always seen that as giving up part of myself. It makes me fearful, but also really excited. Her walls are coming down. She ups her love level to love level 3. And this was my...
Play of the game.
The way Piper does this one-on-one date is just beautiful. It's textbook. I mean, maybe more of a like specific story about the family never LL4-ing her, basically. But she plays walls at the exact right time. They come down. She does this level 3. They have a very strong chemistry game and they kiss after this. She gets the rose immediately after upping the love level.
I found it to be a very good play. It was not my play of the game, but yes, you're right. It was a textbook wall to cold family PTC, punctuated with tears, followed by an LL3. I thought she could have maybe gone to an LL2. Maybe not blaze the LL3 here and still gotten the rose. However, she is now in the head of the pack with Rachel Kirkconnell. They are the only two players at level 3. They are the furthest ahead in this race. But wasn't my play of the game. It maybe was the best play in terms of how it's going to affect, obviously, the outcome for a player. But I just had another play that I liked more. And so it's my play of the game that I'll say later.
I look forward to that. You're welcome to your own play of the game, as
it in fact, probably. I mean, I don't think it had a negative impact on the game. I don't think it would have changed anything either way, but I just enjoyed it the most. And I'll get to
it. I have a runner-up play of the game, but I don't think it's the same as yours, but we'll see.
Interesting. All right.
They go to a private concert with Temecula Road after this and Slow Dance. And the song goes, "Everything I love, 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 love." The soundtrack to her LL3 raise. And there's also a lyric in the song that says, "Prayer to God."
Which God do you think they're praying to? I looked up Temecula Road on an application called Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
I found out they are a Nashville recording artist on the Buena Vista label. That's Disney.
Mm-hmm.
Disney owns ABC. I think all the musical artists that they always use are somehow related to either Warner Brothers or Disney's record labels.
Do you think they will have Brie and Chris come back to perform solo?
Broken up, you mean? No.
I mean, like, bring back only one of them.
No. I think we'll never
see
them again.
They're done. They should have never broken up.
I don't think anybody from Listen to Your Heart has got a chance to do anything, unfortunately. Portion 7 begins. Morning at Nema Colon. We open with more self-shot footage from Heather Martin, who is in her room going crazy, balancing a pizza box on her head and switching her hands from knee to knee as the pizza box falls off and she laughs. What is happening here? What in the fuck am I watching?
I don't know. It's kind of like mini TikTok videos. Maybe they're like this little appeal to Gen Z or something.
But like Heather Martin is not coming up with the ideas for these herself. Producers are telling her, you need to do something funny. I don't know, put a pizza box on your head. Okay. So yes. I don't know what the intent of this is. That the producers are like, we need to have some B-roll of her where we can cut back and she's just doing funny shit in her room. Ha ha ha.
I mean, they're giving her so much screen time with this that she must get a rose, right?
I have no idea. I can't imagine that being the case.
You think they're just having her record all these videos and then she's just going to be cut?
How does Matt James explain that? I mean, we'll get to the end of this episode. We even have all the players saying he better not fucking do that. A potential threat of unionization.
So it's just a full day player.
Essentially. And she's there to get whatever kind of screen time she can. But we go to the group date. All the players show up in a room where Matt James is waiting in a bowling shirt, and then they go to a bowling alley. I already have memories of Ari Leyendyke licking a bowling ball swirling in my head. The ghosts of that date are already with me, sitting on the couch beside me as I watch this date, which is a mirror image, basically.
I also experienced the feeling of watching it with Ari Leyendyke ghosts around me.
Did you?
It's like I was watching like a movie where it's like the scene has been transposed on the screen. And I was like, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like the Dead Leaves in the Dirty Ground White Stripes video.
Mm-hmm.
How dare you? That's a very famous music video.
I know music less than sports. I know, you're laughing.
You don't listen to music? Like,
I didn't say I don't listen to music. I just know it. I don't know music facts.
Okay. Fair.
Except about Listen to Your Heart.
Kit ITMs that this is her favorite group date so far. I loved this little bit they add in there. Because the other group dates she was on were fucking, they were forced to beat the shit out of each other in a boxing ring and beat the shit out of each other in wedding dresses while they're slopping paint and like tackling each other in an open field. This is the first date she's had where she doesn't have to get her ass kicked.
A brief respite, a bowling play for time. Dark Lord Harrison crashes. He was not wearing a bowling shirt, which I wish he had been, but he's wearing a suit and he high fives Bree, maybe. And Kit goes, "What's the twist?" Dark Lord Harrison says, "I know you thought you're having a leisurely day, but we need competition. There's two teams. Winning team gets to go to the after party. Losing team does a long walk home in the rain and loses their chance at the rose." Chelsea says, "I expected a competition, but not play for time." And they bowl.
And these teams, by the way, are a team of five players versus a team of four players. At some point, they flash up the score. The pink petals have 451. The blue bombshells have 448. There's one frame left. I don't know how they're doing this math. I guess they're doing it by averages.
Serena P does something here. This was my runner-up for play of the game. She yells, "Abigail, I love you, but gutter." And then Abigail fucking gutters. Serena P sabotages Abigail in order to win the play for time.
She psyched her
through
out.
Through taunting. Yes. Okay. It reminded me of Kelly Flanagan cheating in the obstacle course. Do yeah. what you can to get ahead.
Similar effect. The pink petals win it. That's Chelsea, Jacinia, Michelle, and Serena P. DLH comes out, gives them a trophy and some extra time, and the blue bombshells, Kit, Bree, Abigail, Serena C, and Rachel.
By the way, I feel like they had Dark Lord Harrison give this trophy out in order to intimidate Matt into not inviting the losers, because I feel like Ari was able to do it because it was just him, but Dark Lord Harrison being there, Matt has to like go against what he's saying in order to be benevolent.
I think they openly told him, "We're going to let you bring the other players later. Just don't say anything about it now." Mm. I think he knew that that fix was in. This is all designed. We're going to get to why and how the producers did this to them, but it's fucking insane. So basically, this is another date that seems like turtling is baked into it. The losers have to go home. They don't get time to talk to him.
Stone Cold player Rachel Kirkconnell says, "Even the rose that's up for grabs, we don't even get that chance."
And portion eight begins with Katie and Piper talking about feeling like new women from one-on-one dates and the losers return. They all complain about not getting time because the oblivious Matt James is cheersing to being in the winner's circle back in the bowling alley with the winners with the pink petals. Back in the Nema Common Room, Abigail breaks into tears, wondering how she can take this seriously when she can't even get time. And then DOH shows up, materializing in the darkness once again, this time with good news. He brings a date card. It's for the losers. Matt James says, "I feel terrible about today. Please come to the after party." And these players, they are all crying in this moment. They turn on a fucking dime, sobbing to cheering, smiles, glee. Rachel says, "All those tears were for nothing." Oh no, Rachel. They were definitely for something. The producers have just let everyone come to the party, but they sent half of the players away and let them believe they were not going to get this fucking time. Specifically to induce the emotional whiplash effect that they all have to be feeling in this instant. incredibly fucking intense. They're all on the verge of emotional collapse, now primed to be pushed over the edge.
Why wouldn't they have the losers join? We already savored their suffering by them walking home in the rain thinking they lost. Now we get to savor the suffering of the winners.
The producers are nothing if not completely Machiavellian in this entire season. Bringing players in, bringing players out, forcing turtling. A fake turtle here. Make you think you're turtling, but now you're not going to turtle. Make the winners think, oh, our odds are better. Back at the after party, he has one-on-one time with Michelle. Her trophy's on the table. They talk about how he loves her competitiveness. They kiss. Serena P then starts breaking down why it's better to have four people competing for the group date rose instead of nine. She's talking about percentages, 25% chance now, exponentially higher odds, she says, which is not exactly true, but definitely better odds. And then the losers come in. And this whiplash happens to the fucking winners. Fuck you. You thought you had a 25% chance?
Redo your math, Serena P. Matt says this process is too important to not get time with everyone. He grabs Jasenia. Serena P. crinkles a note out of her boob at some point to Matt. And then she says, I am falling for you. I just thought I'd let you know. Serena P. ups her love level to love level 3.
And she gets a kiss. Seals it with that chemistry play. And then Chelsea gets some one-on-one time. She asks him to hold on a little longer because she knows she has her guard up. He tells her, if you're here, it's because I see myself with you. He says this to literally every player at all times. It is his generic soothing phrase. And then he returns to the group to hand out the GDR. Serena P. gets the bronze medal speech. Chelsea gets the silver medal speech. And Michelle gets the gold medal, the group date rose itself, for her high level of competition and strong chemistry game. Portia 9 begins with morning at Nemacolin. Who are we going to see? Oh, it's Heather Martin. She's in her room again. She's now really pretending to be going insane by role-playing the fairy tale character Rapunzel as she hangs her head out of a window and calls for Matt. I'm watching this like, what in the fuck is going on?
She says, I just realized I'm Rapunzel. I can let down my hair and he can climb up. Matt, just going a little crazy. Might need some human interaction pretty soon.
The other self-shot footage that we've seen in our beloved game from like, Colton has done some, obviously, in the mornings when he's waking up. Mm-hmm. We've seen some other self-shot shit, I feel like, too. Claire did some for La Quinta when she was quarantining.
Yeah, I think all the leads have been doing it.
Some of the other players did self-shot shit on La Quinta as well. All of it has been more interesting than this. This is, so far, the worst self-shot footage I have ever seen in our beloved game.
I also, I'm like, why didn't they make it about the never been kissed thing? Why wouldn't, well, I guess maybe they want to distance it from Colton. I don't know. We saw all of the selfie videos of all the guys quarantining last season. You would think they would come up with some better shit at this point. And also, that's the best stuff. They probably edited out other footage of her doing God knows what.
I need the Heather Martin tapes. That's up there with missing Huji footage, baloney shows. Mm-hmm. God damn it. But we cut away from Heather and her attempts to amuse us, and we go to Matt James walking into a rec room where he finds somebody who ain't a player on this season but was a player on season 15 of The Bachelorette. This is his best friend and target of birthday cakes to the face, Tyler Cameron, super spreader event enthusiast.
And number one male player on Instagram. He's got a pool cue in his hand. He yells, Matt, what's up, my man? Spread eagle arms.
And this is the council of the Instagram crown. Matt James explains why he likes Katie. TC tells him to stay open because his relationship with Hannah B didn't start until later in his season. Matt James ITMs how good it was to see Tyler. And I've seen this process work for him, he says. What in the fuck is he talking about here? Just fame, right? Like, that's what he means. The process worked. He got 2.3 million Instagram followers. That's what I'm looking for.
The process worked. He was able to fake an on-again, off-again relationship with Hannah B. until he was able to bang a supermodel. Gigi Hadid.
He got eliminated in third place. He didn't find love. He didn't even find a short-term Instagram girlfriend out of
this. He found a YouTube channel.
Exactly. That's the only success.
And a core crew.
The only process working for him that Matt James could possibly be referring to is the fame element of it. That's the only thing he got out of it.
He got a TV show where he was making little dog houses.
And then we cut to another room where Matt James is waiting for Katie, who shows up for the day portion of their one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
And she...
Your tone is starting to shift. With anticipation.
Well, it's because Katie Thurston performs a hoochoo to open this portion of the date.
I really wish we had a video podcast right now. Your face was just lunacy. It's kind of like your TikTok face.
It's shot like complete shit. So you can't really tell if this is a good hoochoo or not. It's very close up. You don't get a good sense of any portion of it. But you do see that she has a decent approach. You see that she's... It was certainly better than her group date hoochoo. More enthusiasm, et cetera, et cetera. But this is marked as a hoochoo. I think it'll be very hard to really break this one down. I'm going to do my best on my Instagram. But credit where credit's due. It was a good hoochoo. And we'll get to maybe something else later.
Jesus. Matt explains that one of his best friends happens to be here at the spa and that this is going to be a prank date. And Tyler is thinking that he's going to have a fancy massage, but you and me, Katie, are going to be in the ear of an actor we hired to play his masseuse, and we're going to ruin his massage. And what follows is not okay.
The whole room is filled with cameras. Katie and Matt James are sitting behind a computer monitor watching the camera feeds as Tyler walks in, and this masseuse is now going to be conscripted into service of what appears to be assault. This masseuse was my
Jorge Moreno, bystander of the week.
She is forced to tweak Tyler Cameron's nipples. Supposedly, we don't see that footage. They don't show it. So I don't know if it's real or not, but she certainly is in there. We see her rolling on his back when Matt James says, okay, go as hard as you can, try to break his bones. So all kinds of assault are going on during this, apparently.
This attempt to get the actor playing masseuse to sexually assault Tyler Cameron and crush his bones was my
error of the game.
I'm looking back on this and I'm like, was Tyler Cameron in on this? Because like, this is actually a huge thing. I remember there was a massage envy scandal where there were like hundreds of women who came forward and said that massage therapists had assaulted them. It's just like a very, you're in a vulnerable position already. He's being recorded without his knowledge. They're sexually assaulting him.
There was somebody in Bachelor. Was it one of the old bachelorettes?
Yes.
On the show got sexually assaulted by a masseuse.
You're right. Meredith Phillips, the second ever bachelorette, claims that she was drugged and assaulted by a masseuse during the filming of her season. I believe by a female masseuse.
Whatever the case, this, at least for me, harkened back to that to some degree.
By the way, that's why Meredith Phillips is never at the reunions or anything. She wasn't in that Pass the Rose video that had every other bachelorette because of something like this.
A problematic one-on-one activity, for sure.
Yeah.
It also involves a prank call, which is less disturbing. And then Matt James enters the room and starts oiling up his hands to give Tyler a massage himself and then lay down on his back laughing. And then the joke is up. They all meet Tyler C. He can't believe this prank has been pulled on him. And portion 10 begins. Night at Nemacolon.
Uh-oh.
Oh, my God. I can't believe what I witnessed. Mm-hmm. Matt James waits outside of a building, and Katie runs up to him. This is at night, again, I'll say. Quick jog. Leaps. And we have another fucking hooju. She did the day portion hooju. She's now doing a night hooju. I'm not sure I've ever seen a night hooju. I have no memory of one.
I have no memory of someone doing two hoojus on one date. I don't think it's ever been done.
I don't think that's ever been done, and I don't think a night hooju exists.
I don't know if I'm going to go that far.
Because usually the night portion of the date is the dinner portion. It's like the more serious portion.
Yeah. Usually they're dressed in a fancier outfit that's harder to hooju in.
Exactly. And this hooju, whatever we may have lost with the first hooju in the terrible shooting and editing of the producers, we have gained tenfold in how this hooju is covered. This hooju is exquisite. Beautiful approach. Quick jog, good momentum, laughing and excited, arms outstretched. Very good mount. Much better than before. High mount. Her elbows rest on his shoulders. That's how far she cleared. No ankle lock around the back, but it's fucking close. The bottom of one of her shoes is touching her other ankle. The cling is solid. I think maybe she couldn't get that ankle lock only because she's too small. Maybe her legs don't fit all the way around him. And you can't get a pass for that, unfortunately. But it's she's trying. I see it. She still has a tight leg grip around his waist. Her hands are clasped behind his neck. She transitions this into a perfect makeout with a light, happy dismount into a fucking hand hold. She never stops touching him. After the mount. Constant contact. Uh-huh. It's fucking brilliant. She has taken virtually every opportunity she sees the lead to hooju him, including a fucking group date and a night portion. She is a professional player.
Look, I had suspicions that Katie was in the pit before this point. After this double hooju, I'm like, she 100% proof listens to our podcast.
Not only, I mean, I don't even know how to begin talking about this. Not only did she do a group date hooju, a night portion hooju, a double fucking one-on-one date hooju, this last one that she did, like she went out with a fucking bang. This shit was excellent. It's like not quite Kelsey Weir level, but I don't know if anybody's going to get to that level. Her athleticism is just like fucking unbelievable. But this was a fantastic fucking hooju. She definitely put all of her effort into it. I just loved it. Absolutely loved it.
They talk about the day portion and how much fun it was to torture his best friend. And Katie says in the past, one thing she was missing was she was missing someone that was playful. He's like, his questions are so bizarre. What's been a long-term relationship for you? She says, well, I had a relationship almost 3 years, thought he was going to be the one, but I was not being who I was truly meant to be. I've been particular about who I want to date, and now I'm quick to recognize a red flag. Was thinking, hopefully, maybe I could change them or help them. I want to meet somebody who is also ready and knows who they are. No changing anybody, accept each other from the get-go and grow together. I'm here for you through all of it. I can see it's continuing, and I'm very hopeful my love story is your love story. I'm here to the end if you want me to be.
Brilliantly said. There's a line in the middle there where she says, I want to meet someone who knows who they are. You want to meet someone who knows who they are? Well, there's Matt James is sitting across from you. Is he not that person? What do you mean someone? It's this subtle psychological hint that he's not the one for me. Somebody else will be. Find me someone else. I will meet that person eventually because I'm going to be the fucking bachelorette. This is a crown play. fucking genius. Well, in all the same lines, she's saying, I am committed to you. I'll be here if you want me to be here. All the shit that you have to say, the fucking praising the process, the 4TRR, but that's in there. It's laid in there. I'm going to meet someone who knows who they are.
She knows her brand and she is sticking to it through and through. And she even says, like, that's her brand, is that she doesn't change, that she is authentically herself. And she gets multiple people to say that about her in the show.
Oh, you know what? I forgot to mention. That nighttime hooju was my...
Play of the game.
I got so excited talking about it, I forgot to give it its proper award.
I was wondering, I was like, he hasn't said his play of the game yet. That's hilarious.
What was that? Yeah, sorry.
I mean, it's beautiful. It deserves it, but...
It was fucking fantastic.
It was a strong play, but unfortunately, the date takes a turn.
Katie's even trying here, too. She's like, I don't know if you're getting the validation you deserve, but you're doing a great job.
How you doing? Nice line.
She's trying. She's doing everything right. And unfortunately, it's just not in the cards for her. Or fortunately, it's just not in the cards for her because now she's going to get the fucking crown. But Matt James picks up the one-on-one rose and he says he appreciates her and how much she's meant to him in the process. But she's been honest with him and he owes her the same honesty. He's just progressed further along with other women. That's his dump line that he uses on everyone as well. And she gets a one-on-one execution here. She holds it together. She walks out. And again, we just are reminded that Katie's worst part of her game is the first audience game, which, as she wears the crown, will not matter at all.
Mm-mm.
Because she's the first audience now.
She is going to devour the men on her season. Like, they're just not going to be as skilled players as her.
I think you're right. I think it's going to be very similar to what happened on the male goat Nick Viall's season 21 of The Bachelor. He was such a seasoned player, an astute student of the game, at least in that era. I don't know that he is anymore, but he couldn't watch these other players trying to play it. Corinne Olympios was really the highest level player of that season, and he, you know, loved watching her, but he seemed bored with it.
Well, he was jaded. He was tired. Exactly. I don't think Katie's going to be like that at all.
But I don't think any of these guys are going to be able to run game against her because she understands the game cold. So if she sees somebody trying to make overt plays to get whatever screen time or whatever the case may be, she's going to shut this shit down immediately. It's going to be a fascinating season to watch.
I can't stop brainstorming about the limo exits, by the way. Are we going to see a dildo tot?
Something, yes. I think it must be referenced. There's no way it won't be because it was such an iconic moment of this season. Arguably the most important moment. I think it was part of why she gets the crown. But in this moment where she gets kicked off, all I could think was she has to be shitting her fucking pants because she made all of these plays perfectly. She was definitely, in terms of play, one of the best this season. And then she gets eliminated in fucking 11th place. She's got to be like, fuck, I didn't do enough to get the crown. I'm going out way too early.
Oh, for sure. For sure. There's no way you would think you're going to get the crown at this point. And I do think she kind of left some stuff on the table. We never saw her play her PTC about her dad to Matt James. We only saw her play it to Trot.
Doesn't mean she didn't play it. They might have cut that out and they're saving it for Bachelorette. Who knows? But the truth remains, even though she's getting kicked off and all over the place, her play was so fucking strong, she got the crown. It's astounding.
Her exit is pretty good. She plays it pretty blindsided, said she felt the blood leave her face, that she was picturing their future. I don't regret being myself. It just sucks that it wasn't enough. I thought it was too soon to count me out as one of them. And she pulls out tears here. Says, I know what I deserve, and I deserve a man who knows what I have to offer. I am who I am, and there's someone out there who wants that. Just fucking full, straight-on crown speech.
She should have placed a crown on her head after she said that last line. Then we cut back to the Nema common room, and of course a Grim Reaper enters. to take Katie's bag, and we see the reactions of the remaining players. Piper covers her mouth with both hands, but you can see her eyes. She's smiling. She's covering a smile. Abigail does the exact same thing. And then this good bit of play here from Rachel Kirkconnell. She covers her entire face with both hands. She covers her eyes, nose, and mouth. You don't see a shred of the glee on her face at Katie's dismissal. And then portion 11 begins. Heather Martin, we're checking back in with old Heather. She's getting ready for the cocktail party. She says he could be her husband, and it's her dream to get engaged to him. She's never met him. Literally never met him.
She loads love level 1, so she already has butterflies. And also, should be noted, she's wearing a fucking wedding dress.
They did her so fucking dirty this season. Jesus Christ. The women all come into the cocktail party. There's 10 ladies going in. Rachel gives a little first responder by handing him a glass of champagne. They all cheers. He bachelor preferences Abigail. And then Heather drives in her white wedding dress, cocktail dress, through the night to Nima Cohen. They have her fucking driving.
We see her driving up to the front door.
It's so fucking stupid. Oh, God.
It is. Abigail gets a kiss. Bree gets a kiss here. Heather emerges from the van as Bree is speaking, and she slowly loses her train of thought as Heather struggles with the rotating door to come in.
Oh, Jesus. I'm just like, did they put a fucking wooden block in that door or something? Are they doing this to her on fucking purpose?
They're leaving that in the edit on purpose. They didn't have to show her struggling with the door at all. And Heather performs a steal from Piper. Matt starts laughing so hard that he produces tears here.
They also do a thing when she walks in, though. Once she gets out of the fucking rotating door, when she figures out how to get in, they have her walk right by all the other players without saying a word. She does kind of a wave, and all the other players are like, who the fuck is that? What's going on? They're losing their minds. The anxiety is ratcheted up. The producers don't allow Heather Martin to explain herself or have any kind of soothing or relationship building with any of these players. She just walks right by them. Here's the element. Fuck you. Will this mean more turtling? Everybody's losing their mind now.
Of course it means more turtling. This is turtle season.
And then after Matt James is laughing, Piper comes out furious from having been stolen from and tells all the other women that it's Heather from Colton's season, and he started laughing when he saw her.
Matt laughing is another moment of, like, he hasn't seen this show. He doesn't understand the emotional stakes and what all the women are going through at all. He doesn't even think about that. Like, oh, this is probably going to send all the women into a tailspin. Doesn't even occur to him.
I don't think he cares. I don't think he gives a shit about it.
The women discuss who she is. They're like, she's from Colton season. She's friends with Hannah Brown. Piper says, I'm literally shaking. Serena C says, I already don't like her. Justenia, she's had her time. Go home, please. I love how they had this whole scandal of, like, the women bullying the new girls and not responding well. And they literally force Matt James to kick out all of the people that bullied the new girls. And then they just decide they're going to bully this new girl again.
They literally did it again.
It hasn't even been that long.
It's the exact same thing. They did it fucking again. It's incredible.
Serena C in the promo says this virus is coming in. She's infecting the whole system. Literally a COVID joke. She is COVID.
Chelsea ITMs at the very end here. If you give her a rose, you better marry her because the rest of us are going to be pissed. This is an open threat to unionize. To be like, get rid of her or we're fucking walking. And of course, we don't get a rose ceremony. And then, yeah, we're in the teaser. Everybody's fucking crying. Heather Martin is even driven to tears. So they are going to manage to destroy her in the process of all of this as well.
Great.
And then the tag is Serena P is forced to hold up a pillow so Matt James can show off his karate skills and kick it out of her hand. Who was your MVP?
Piper was my MVP. You called Piper Final Four from the very beginning. And I think you saw something in her that I feel like is really starting to come out. Her one-on-one was absolutely outstanding. She played this PTC of no familial LL4s and that she had a different love language than her parents. And she actually produced tears there. She had a perfect walls game, perfect love level 3 raise, and strong chemistry game at the private concert. I was incredibly impressed by Piper this episode.
Piper James was also my
MVP.
Totally agree with you. For this round of the game, I think she had the strongest overall play. And I think there's more PTCs to come. I think that was some kind of generalized PTC about, oh, my parents weren't as emotionally invested as I would have liked them to be. I think she's got something else up her sleeve. And I think she's going to pull it out at the next opportunity. And I think she's going to go very far. Still, as you said, she was in my top 4. And I think that's going to pay off. We shall see.
I love a layered PTC.
I think it may be a totally different PTC.
Hmm.
Illness, death, something of that nature. We will find out very shortly. But thank you, everyone. That does it. This was our game coverage for this week. And still, no mention of any of the Rachel Kirkconnell stuff coming from either her or the show or anyone surrounding it. I think she's supposed to go on Happy Hour and talk about it, if I remember reading that right. I'm not exactly positive, but I think Rachel Lindsay mentioned something about that.
Happy Hour is the place for the apology tour now. Another thing we have not heard any mention of. Jed Talks. Where is it? What happened?
I think he got that letter. Cease and desist, or we will sue you to fucking death.
Do you think we're getting letters?
For what?
Should we be checking for letters? I don't know.
I never check my mail. I'm just kidding. I do check my mail. I've received no letters from NZK, Warner Brothers, ABC, or anyone.
The de-jetification of the internet. It's happening.
Yeah, I think he got completely shut down by production. Unfortunately, because I really did want to listen to that podcast. I was curious to hear what he had to say. I'm also curious to see if he'll just put out like kind of a watered down version of it and be like, well, fuck it. I could still do my podcast. I'll just talk about my music.
Yeah. Yeah. Interested to see how the whole Rachel thing is going to be handled. I think we were talking about whether or not they would address it on a reunion show of Women Tell All or after the final rose. I think it will 100% be addressed. I think in other seasons you could have gotten away with maybe glossing over it, but not this one.
I agree. I think it must be addressed. The manner in which it will be addressed, I'm curious. Like, is it going to be on Happy Hour? Is it going to be an Instagram story? Is it going to be a whole full hot seat on After the Final Rose or Women Tell All? I don't know. But we will find out very quickly, and we're going to start finding out other shit about Bachelorette very quickly, too. I think that announcement's going to come in the next few days, and then we're going to start getting players leaked, and all of that shit starts up again, just like it did for Bachelorette, whatever that was, 3-4 months ago. Jesus Christ.
This year is crazy.
It's crazy in so many fucking ways.
It's so crazy, I feel like I'm being driven to be like Rapunzel.
You start spinning a pizza box on your head.
Well, thank you guys for joining us for our game breakdown. We will be coming at you with Twibbin on Thursday, this week in Bachelor Nation. All the Bachelor Nation news, all the parasocial plays of the week, our screams from the pit.
And state of the world. A lot of interesting things going on out there in that big wide world. Some of them related to aliens, others not. We'll see what we get.
Will it be an alien or a not alien episode?
50-50.
We shall see.
But thank you also for sending me all of the delicious tids at Bachelor Clues down deep in the pit. It's what I live on. It's how I subsist. So thank you for keeping me alive. And also, for those who might be interested, we did just release a Patreon episode yesterday. And you can listen to the first half hour of it in your normal podcast feed. But if you want to hear the whole thing, which has over an hour more of content, as well as a bunch of different podcast episodes that we've dropped in there, videos, lists of our terms, pictures of squirrels, many things can be found deep in the bottom of the pit. If any of that interests you, please go over to patreon.com/gameofroses and you can check it all out.
The episode we did this week, we talked about the announcement of Katie Thurston and we discussed Nick Viall's episode of the Viall Files with Rachel Harris,
in which they talked a lot about gameplay and even likened our beloved game to the game of football. So check that out if you dare. And before we go, as always, what is that dwob at?
It has been 6,896 days without an Asian bachelor. Praise be Lord Harrison.
Please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us and then. Please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us and then. Please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us and then.
We're almost through the second month of this year, but that doesn't mean that you should forget about those New Year's resolutions, your new goals, especially your skincare goals. Small, easy changes in your routine can have amazing results. And your secret weapon should be Dime Beauty. I've been using this stuff. Look at me. Look at my face, Pace Case.
You're glowing.
How young do I look? Tell me. Tell me the number.
That's a Pace Case glow. You look like a little baby.
Thank you. That's the look I'm going for. And I put the stuff on at night, Dime's eye cream. And then they have a dewy day cream that I also use. And this is the result.
I've literally never used a moisturizer before. Mm-hmm. I've always had oily skin, but now it's getting to that time. And I made one of my New Year's resolutions to be to do my skincare routine. And I'm using the dewy day cream in the morning. I keep it on the left. Using the restorative night cream, I keep it on the right. It's bim, bam, boom. I know which one to use. And now my face is moisturized all the time, and it's so nice.
You look like a baby as well.
Thank you. I was waiting for it. A little slow. But this takes the guesswork out of the routine. So this is part of the work system, the two moisturizers. There's also a sold-out retinol alternative, the TBT cream. I can't wait to try that one as well. Dime has over 2 million happy customers, and their product reviews are literally all 5 stars.
This year, love your skin again. Go to dimebeautyco.com now and unlock your discount. That's dimebeautyco.com. Creams and serums are made of 70% water, 15% preservatives and emulsifiers, leaving only around 15% for the active ingredients that your skin needs. But luckily now, there's Fiber Skincare.
15 years ago, the scientists behind Fiber Skincare started working on nanofibers, which are 500 times smaller than human hair. You know, I saw that in 3 Body Problem. Mm. 1 year ago, they patented a way of wrapping the nanofiber around oil or liquid-based ingredients. This means they can deliver 5 times the active ingredients compared to creams or serums, as there is no need for water, preservatives, or emulsifiers.
The first formulation made with this technology is plant-based, anti-wrinkle. It's a set of patches that you use over a series of 7 days. You just put these on whenever you would apply your serums, and your skin is going to feel tighter in 10 seconds. And over the 7-day program, it has been clinically proven to reduce wrinkles by, get this, 19.4%, a very precise percentage. In fact, they have a tighter skin guarantee. If your skin isn't tighter in 7 days, they're going to give you your money back, no questions asked.
You get the tighter skin guarantee with this 7-day routine. Tighter skin or your money back. Get a 15% discount code by using the discount code GAME. That's Fiber Skincare.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.